Now, Ian Jessup on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. Every month, Norm Farrell, who has the blog Northern Insight, joins us to talk about some of the interesting things he has been researching and writing about. Today, we're going to talk about three issues. Number one, the First Nations leader accused of making a bucket of money. Two, the BC Liberals' gutting of resource ministries. And three, the failure of the BC Liberals' job plan. Norm, how are you?
Hi, Ian.
Norm, you wrote a piece about racism taints the Kwikwetlem reporting of this Chief Ron Giesbrecht, who made $800,000 and he had a salary of just over $4,000, and there was a great hue and cry in the media about it. Take us through that and your impressions of the media coverage of that.
Well, initially, I was caught up by the media coverage myself, and when I heard that this chief of a very small band had earned substantially from the funds of the band in the past year, I think almost $1 million, it was shocking to me, and particularly given that the band itself is not the housing condition and so on, is there's a fair bit of inadequate housing there and so on. But then I started to look at a little bit more of the detail, and I had an opportunity as well to look at the financial statements of the band, and I found that quite interesting in that they really seem to have made a huge amount of progress in the past year economically. Now, they had something like $10 million worth of development revenues come into the band, and it's not absolutely clear what that relates to, but it does seem that they've been working on a remediation project in the old Riverview Hospital site, and they've been doing something related to the construction of the rapid transit line that's going out to Kwikwetlem. Now, the financial statements of the Kwikwetlem Reserve, the auditors, who are independent of the band, gave a report that said that the band, in fact, maintained a system of internal accounting and administrative controls of high quality. And so I think if you look at the actual arrangement that was made, it does seem that it's not unusual in business today to have fairly lucrative incentives for individuals that are managing organizations who do in fact achieve good results. And so I was looking at the coverage across Canada and seeing just a very substantial amount of outrage that this particular individual was paid an amount that's actually less than 10% of the development projects that he brought into the band in the past year alone. And then I had a look at you know, what others are being rewarded is, say, for example, if you look at the hedge fund managers, the top five hedge managers in North America, hedge fund managers earned $14.4 billion in 2013. Now, the top 10, it's about $19 or $20 billion. So if you look at the incredible outrage, and I searched out and there were something like 30,000 articles of reporting on the Kwikwetlem chief, the remuneration that he was earning. And yet if you look at the business arrangements in general, there's very little outrage over the fact that other individuals, who presumably are all old white men, earn huge amounts of money without comment. And I think even with respect to, say, the media of Canada, Post Haste, which is an organization that has daily newspapers from Montreal through to Vancouver, I counted 15 different writers that were doing work in Post Media papers about this Ron Giesbrecht story. And yet, I know that I had learned in an earlier story that I did that the CEO of Post Media, which has, as I said, has been losing money since its inception, he managed to get a $1.8 million remuneration, which was up 50% from the previous year. And that got almost no mention at all in Post Media newspapers. And I thought, that's a pretty good comparator, where one individual who's had success earns a substantial bonus and they get outraged, but their own leader, their own boss, gets some substantial reward on the after earning no particular advantage for the company through his management. And it just seemed to me that it's quite a double standard of reporting.
And also, Norm, this Ron Giesbrecht of the Kwikwetlem, is that how you pronounce it, Kwikwetlem?
That's correct.
First Nations. The $800,000 he made, that was a commission based on what he brought into the band. So he obviously did his work, but if he doesn't bring anything in, he doesn't get any money. Yet, when the Post Media, head of the Post Media, got his big raise, he got it after Post Media suffered losses.
That's right. And it's suffered a loss every year since its inception 4 years ago.
Yeah. Let's go to Mike, who's been waiting. Mike, you're on CFAX. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks very much. Quick question related to this remuneration. I noticed one of the earlier articles said that it was based on a percentage of the gross, not the net.
Yeah, gross. It said gross profits, I think, was the reporting.
Yeah, so, now my concern is that that's an incentive for him to produce projects that don't actually pay off.
Well, except that if it is calculated on the basis of gross profits, that would not be true. And the fact is that the band's net revenues, the cash in the bank, rose by over $5 million in the past year. So
okay.
It does seem that the band is in much better financial shape now than it was a year ago.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks.
Okay.
Now, my point is not necessarily to defend the payment. It does seem to me to be a substantial one that should be questioned. But my point is that the media jumped on this without having all of the facts and just was extravagant in their criticism of the individual.
And as you point out, there were outside auditors who looked at the First Nations books and found them impeccable, correct?
That's right. And Post Media reported in one of their newspapers that the band members didn't know anything about this $800,000 bonus but the report of the auditors makes it very clear that the auditors met with the band counselors, and the management of the band met with the counselors on a routine basis, and so it's impossible to say that the band did not know, because the elected members were very much a party to that agreement.
Yeah. Norm Farrell is our guest. He's here every month to talk about issues that he researches and writes about on his blog, Northern Insight. We'll take a commercial break and we'll come back, but we welcome your calls. Our number is 386-1161.
Where your opinion matters. Ian Jessup on CFAX 1070.
Welcome. Norm Farrell is our guest. We're talking about a number of issues, and we have an email from Gail who says, thank you to your guest. I thought the whole reporting of this issue smacked of racism. I'm so glad that your guest did some digging and has presented the other side of the story. Thank you. Thank you, Gail, for your email. Now, Norm, our next issue. We talked to Calvin Sanborn of the Nuvik Environmental Law Center.
Good interview, that was.
Well, thank you. And he talked about the gutting of some of the folks in the ministries, and you've done some research on that as well.
Well, I had a look at the budgets that have been in place, and In 2009, the Ministry of Environment had a budget which in today's dollars is $272 million. In the past fiscal year, 2014, it was $130 million, which is well less than half of what it was just 5 years ago. And that has led to a reduction in staff, a reduction in the number of inspections that are conducted, and just a resignation from the oversight role the government should be playing in caring for the environment. If you look at the amount of money that the provincial government has spent on the environment ministry in the last 5 years, it's the last 4 years, it's $543 million.
Mm-hmm.
During the same time, on the natural gas development and mining and petroleum development, they've spent $1.7 million. So about three times more on promoting the expansion of mining and natural gas and petroleum, and you know, much less money spent on making certain that that's conducted in a safe and effective way. Now, that $1.7 million that they've spent directly is in addition to, we've talked previously about almost $5 billion in the same range of foregone gas royalties, where we've subsidized the production of natural gas. So you're looking at almost $7 billion of tax expenditures and direct expenditures in the last 4 years, with half a billion dollars spent on the environmental aspect of the government's role.
Do you think, Norm, that there has been, over the last number of decades, there has been a feeling amongst many governments around the world, including our federal government and our provincial government, that there is too much regulation for industry and industry needs government to get out of the way? Do you see this Mount Pauley issue and possibly the Northern Gateway pipeline issue as kind of a turning point where the public are starting to push back and say, wait a minute, government is supposed to be here to protect our interests, not only the interests of corporations, but the interests of the public at large? Do you see a kind of a shift in the public's mood?
I think it's too early to tell at this point whether there will be a shift. There's certainly an indication that the people who live in that central portion of the BC interior, who are tremendously affected today and will be affected in the future, it's certain that they are going to revise their thinking about having the massive open pit mine in amongst a confluence of waterways that feed what is one of the world's most important salmon fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens just at a time when we're about, I think today they're opening the sockeye salmon fishery on the Fraser River for a short period of time, and it's a reminder of just how important that is. It also, though, we have obligations under international treaties with the Americans to protect the salmon resource, and I think it's a good question to ask the federal government why they aren't involved in protecting the environment in these regions. And we've seen it countless times in recent years that they don't want to play a role that stands in the way of industrial development. But I think it could easily lead to international difficulties if this Mount Pauley situation turns out to have a significant impact on the Fraser River fishery.
You know, you and I have both grew up in smaller towns, you in Powell River and me in Prince Rupert. And with the cutbacks in, not cutbacks, but with the increase in BC ferry rates, tourism has been impacted along the coast. And you were telling me a story about you going back to Powell River and how it's so much different than it was when you were a kid. Tell us that.
I was surprised at the number of commercial vacancies in the town. Now, the pulp mill has, when I was a teenager and actually worked in the mill during the summers when I was going to school, the pulp mill there, the paper mill, employed about 2,500 people. I understand they're down to about 300 or 400 people nowadays. But Paul River had sort of remade itself as a place that was bringing in a lot of tourism business, these restaurant trades that didn't exist in the days that I lived there. And there are various different canoeing paths and hiking trails and so on that they promoted successfully to people, along with Desolation Sound and the lands north of Paul River are real attractants with marine parks and so on. So it was really important to maintain that kind of growth as a replacement for the old industrial activity that used to take place there. We now send our logs to China to be sawmilled, to be milled, and so there's no major sawmill at the plant that's that used to be a part of the pulp and paper operation. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that when we have a strategy that that harms the tourism on the coastal trades, we're assigning those communities to sort of a recessionary environment. And I don't know why a government that is so interested in promoting the economy in certain elements, why they're so deaf to the problems that that they're causing in the coastal areas.
Now, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. Norm, let's look at the last issue on the agenda today, which is the BC Liberals' job plan. Is it working or is it not?
Well, you know, we've talked before about the fact that the numbers of jobs that they've been creating have been less in recent years than they were in the 90s, which were allegedly dark days. And I looked at the changes in the participation rate and the employment rates in British Columbia, and during the period that that the BC Jobs Plan has been in effect, which is almost 4 years now, there's been a fairly substantial decline in both the employment rate and the participation rate in British Columbia. And that means that a number of the population has grown. Jobs have grown at nowhere near the same rate. In fact, if you look at the numbers of employable persons over the last few years, there's the growth in number of the people that could be in the workforce is something like 500,000, with only about 200,000 additional jobs, full-time jobs. So less than half of the people that have wanted to enter the workforce have found jobs, in effect.
I was looking at the numbers today, and during the dark days of the 90s, as you described, the NDP government, under the NDP government, there were about 2,900 jobs a month created. The Liberals, up until last month, were creating about 2,100 jobs a month. But when you break that down on a monthly basis for Christy Clark's job plan, you have about 1,000 jobs a month. So as one politician described it, it's not a jobs plan, it's a public relations plan.
that's demonstrated, isn't it, when you look at the building of three new ferries are going to be done in Europe again.
In Poland, that's right.
That's right. Yeah. So, and those three ferries that they're going to build are actually based on a design of one particular ship that was built in BC. So it's not like that's a fairly recent ship. I think it's called the Island Sky. And so we certainly had the capability a short while ago to build that type of vessel, and yet they've decided now that they don't want to be bothered with it. So I have this picture in my mind that Christy Clark will be wearing a hard hat, standing in a shipyard, getting the applause of the workers, but that shipyard will be in Poland, not in North Vancouver.
Norm, always good to talk to you. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
That's Norm Farrell. He has a blog, Northern Insight.